Begin after six taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hello! Thanks for listening, everyone. We are back for the second installment of our TCM Film Fest, TCM Classic Film Fest coverage. I'm Polly Platt Evangelist, Lady P, no relation to Master P, and with me today is a woman who is innocent of any psychic violence. It's Brutal Exterminator, Miss Kristen Sales.
Thank you for having me. You are an Eternal, I am a Brutal Exterminator, and we are going to talk about where those terms come from very shortly.
Precisely. If this podcast sounds a little bit rambly, it is because we're a little bit sleep deprived.
Yeah, we're in the thick of TCM Fest festivalitis, which is a combination of foggy brain, sort of rumbly tummy, sore feet, perhaps sunburned, restless leg syndrome. I don't know. There's a bunch of we're walking pharmacies now, and we haven't had that much sleep. But the fun thing about TCM Fest is everyone is crazy.
It's true.
From trying to see 7 films in one day.
True. And I think just generally kind of kooky. So
it's true.
The sleep deprivation and the gorging on whatever is closest, whatever food is closest to you, that probably doesn't help.
No, but it's encouraged. It's like everyone here, I think that's why Arsenic and Old Lace was such a popular screening, because everyone here feels like they're going insane like Cary Grant in Arsenic and Old Lace. It's very appropriate.
Yeah. So yeah, let's talk about the movies. As you mentioned, Arsenic and Old Lace sold out.
Right.
Which, like, that was so under my radar, and yet I guess it was extremely popular.
I feel like it's just a fan favorite. Like, in terms of comedy being the theme, it's like, what's a funnier movie to watch with an audience? There's so many like huge rollicking laughs. And that movie is funny when you watch it at home. I can only imagine how funny it is when you're watching it with, 200 other people.
True.
But we didn't really see any funny. Oh, I didn't.
Yeah. Let's start with me. So last night, as I was leaving you all last night, we put out our first installment, and I ran out of the hotel room to a line for High Anxiety. But more than just a film, it was an opportunity to see the legend Mel Brooks in person. And it was a tough decision, because there were so many great things playing last night, including a nitrate print of Laura, which seemed to be the hot ticket. But, Mel Brooks packed the house, and he was wonderful and hysterical and funnier than the movie, though the movie was also pretty funny. And he talked about Madeline Kahn, which makes me happy every time he does it. He seems to take any opportunity to talk about her, and I really appreciate that. Mel Brooks and I are on the same page. And, if you've seen High Anxiety, it's pretty funny. There's some pretty great gags, including I think my favorite bit was where the two bad guys are covering the camera with the plates, which, if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. And it's got Madeline Kahn doing an Eva Marie Saint / Kim Novak impression, and that's wonderful. And then this morning I went out and saw yet another Cloris Leachman film. Not only did she appear in High Anxiety, but she's also in Last Picture Show, the 1971 Peter Bogdanovich film. And he also was in attendance, and he also talked about Madeline Kahn. So I'm having a very, very Madeline Kahn intensive fest, which,
I mean,
no complaints.
What could be better?
Exactly. And in between those two screenings, I saw Stalag 17, William Holden.
Was there a guest for that, or just the
there movie? Was, as a matter of fact. Personal hero, Alex Trebek, was there.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no. I'm a huge Jeopardy fan.
So, what does Alex Trebek talk about when he is the special guest for a movie that obviously he doesn't really have any connection to?
I mean, he just kind of talked about Bill Holden.
Oh.
And how much of a cad he was, and how he was constantly cheating on his wife. But
yeah, but I feel like Have you seen Bill Holden?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, I'm not excusing that behavior, but it's like...
Like, spread the wealth, lady. Come on.
I mean, let's not go that far. Sanctity of marriage of whatnot, but yeah. So, Stalag 17 and Last Picture Show, those aren't comedies.
Not even a little.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little for Stalag. Last Picture Show is so bleak.
It's like a bummer.
Yeah. And that's not to say there aren't funny moments, because I think most great dramas need to be leavened with humor, but that is, I think, the bleakest movie I've seen at the fest.
Yeah.
Of the two fests I've been to. Like, I've just...
Didn't you see Children's Hour with...
No, I didn't. Okay. I wish I did. That is a bummer of a movie.
I have to... Ooh. In terms of, like, the most bummer movie I saw at TCM Fest, it's either Children's Hour or The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, which, if my memory serves me correctly, I saw on the same day. And I wanted to jump off a bridge. Mm-hmm. So, which makes me super, super glad that they're screening so much comedy at this festival, because it's kind of like, if you want to see a more downer movie, like... Go with God, like, do that. But if you want to just, like, duck into a 70-minute Marx Brothers movie and turn off your brain, by all means, please do that.
In fact, yeah. And I intend to do that.
It's the same choice.
Yeah.
Okay, so while you were seeing High Anxiety last night, I was seeing another renowned comedy, Cat People.
Yeah.
Well known for its laugh factor. This was kind of like a low-key screening, because it was in a weird situation. Like, most of those screenings in that slot, like, started at 9 or 9:30. Started at 10:15. It was up against some hard things. So it was in the smallest theater, but there weren't that many people. There was maybe, like, half of the people. But there was a really great introduction, very impassioned introduction from William Joyce, a filmmaker, writer. And he just was, like, very adamant about the passion of Val Lewton, the passion of Jacques Tourneur, the passion of people who are just making a project in 16 days with no money at RKO because Orson Welles had screwed the studio and they were like, there's no money to make your movie, but go ahead and make a masterpiece. And Cat People is a masterpiece. But the most interesting thing about Cat People is RKO was like, oh, there's no money because Orson Welles spent it all on Magnificent Ambersons. So what you're going to do is use the sets from Magnificent Ambersons in Cat People, which is part of the reason the movie looks so amazing. But I had never seen it. I somehow managed to see Curse of the Cat People before Cat People, which is entirely different takes. But I was struck by how... It was a 35 print. It looked perfect. I was just struck by how serious but not self-serious the movie is. It's just kind of like, it's like a weird immigrant story, and it's about like folklore versus science in a way. And it's kind of like an adult movie that takes seriously like the issues of people's lives, like their married life, and I don't know. And again, it's like a very short movie that ends perfectly at the right time.
Okay.
And it's really suspenseful and it's fabulous. And then it was a perfect like 10 p.m. movie.
Okay. I mean, I don't mean to, no disrespect to Cat People or any of the films you saw, but you did just get done telling me just before we were recording that you think Zardoz is a legitimately great movie.
Yeah.
Which is the film you saw immediately after Cat People.
Yeah, because Cat People was a short movie, right? But it ended at like 11:55 and Zardo started at 12 o'clock. So I like walked out of Cat People and immediately walked into Zardos, which, I mean, that's in terms of genre and mood, those shifts are kind of 180s. So I don't know if you've ever been to a midnight screening at TCM Fest, but first of all, they are the best. It's like usually the TCM Underground movies, so cult classics or just like weird discoveries. Or the thing about Zardoz is, like, it's directed by John Borman, who's a legitimately great director. And I guess the programmer and the introduction was by Millie DiCerco, who does the TCM Underground for TCM, who's the best. Her intros are always the best. But she gave, like, an incredible amount of context to the movie, because I had never seen it before. And I would say probably about, like, 80% of the people in that screening had never seen it before. So John Borman basically made a ton of money for the studio with Deliverance. and Zardos was two years later. So they basically gave him a blank check to do a passion project. And what he chose, he wrote, directed, and produces this original sci-fi epic, which takes place in the year 2293. And basically, society has been stratified in three levels. One level is like this elite group of rich people who have, through genetic engineering or something, determined a way to live forever. But they're really bored of it, and a lot of them really want to die, but they can't, because even if they die, like if they kill themselves or something, they get respawned. So they're living in this kind of like hippie commune, but they all hate it. And then there's like the lowest level, which is like garbage people, I guess, like humans, non-evolved humans, that are basically, they live in like the hinterlands or the outer lands or something, and those people are sort of, they're like the farmers, they grow the food for the rich people. And then the middle level is the Brutals, which are like basically like a fascist police force that corral the subhumans or whatever, and they don't interact with the upper echelon. Okay, so all that to say, the Sean Connery character, just imagine Sean Connery with his mustache and his long ponytail and his...
Yeah, we should have prefaced this whole thing. This is the movie where Sean Connery wears the mankini.
The mankini, right. Yeah. So he has a bandolier and then like a bright red, like mankini diaper type status, and like never wears a shirt in the whole movie. It's like a 2-hour movie. Anyway, he's part of the Brutals, which are like these fascist police force. They just kill all these people. And then, but the thing about Sean Connery is like he was like secretly genetically developed, and he was taught to read by like the secret force. The film unfolds in like a series of flashbacks, like multiple flashbacks. So anyway, you eventually learn that he is like smarter than everybody else. So what happens is Zardos is the name of like the god in the realm, and it's represented by a giant floating head, like kind of picture like an Easter Island type head that literally floats around or whatever. So Sean Connery, since he's like a smart guy, jumps into this head. He finds Zardos, like the human form of Zardos, who is like this like false idol or whatever, and Connery kills him, and then he goes to like the realm of...
Are these all spoilers?
No, like, okay. This is the first 10 minutes of the movie. It's impossible. I'm not even going to get into what happens because it's insane. As if this isn't insane. But he jumps into this Easter Island head. He kills the false idol, who is Zardos or whatever. And then he infiltrates the realm of the Eternals. And they, like, haven't come in contact with the Brutal in, like, 200 years. So when they get to his crazy realm, and the lady, one of the ladies that's in charge of that is Charlotte Rampling. Very young, very sexy Charlotte Rampling. So they go, and then Charlotte Rampling is like one of the in charge of that area, and then this other lady is in charge, and she's like a scientist. So the scientist lady is like, Charlotte Rampling's like, we need to kill him. Like, he can't be here. He's going to disrupt everything. But the other scientist lady is like, actually, we need to study him because we haven't had any influence with these people, and we can learn something, and we need to like keep him. And then like all the Eternals, who are like all super hot and super bored, are like, we're bored, like let's just keep him as a plaything. So they like keep him, and like he feeds them bread, and they keep him like in a cage like a monkey. That's super psycho. And anyway, long story short, I always thought that Zardos was just like this crazy picture of Sean Connery in the mankini, and it was just a joke. Little did I know that I actually, at the end of this, ended up thinking that Zardos is a great movie. It's super smart in a way that, like, science fiction, like a science fiction novel, you know, like something like a Philip K. Dick novel or Dune or something, like, creates its own world and, like, has a political infrastructure and like gender politics and comments on the time and comments on the past and the future, and all of that like John Boorman just like wrote out of his brain. Like, there's no pre-existing context for any of this.
Yeah,
and it's like, if you can get on board with what the film is about, like if you don't check out as soon as you see the giant floating head, I think it's actually really rewarding.
Okay.
And Connery's actually good in it.
Impossible.
No, he is.
Okay.
Like, he's just, like, so, like, to be fair, most, his chest hair does most of the acting, but it's, like, it's important to the character in a weird way.
Okay.
I can't even believe I'm, like, stumping so hard for Zardoz, but it was an amazing theatrical experience, a great TCM Fest Midnight movie that the audience was, like, consistently laughing at but also really engaged with. And usually, you know, you see people or you hear people that have fallen asleep. I didn't hear or see anyone that have fallen asleep. I feel like everyone was riveted.
Okay.
Whether they liked it or not, whether they understood it or not.
Yeah.
It's, like, kind of an original vision that I think you kind of have to respect a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, is it a, but it's still a midnight movie, right?
Yeah.
That's the appropriate time right, frame definitely. In which to see this.
But it's also really beautiful. Like, it's really well shot.
Yeah.
The only, like, musical score is Beethoven's Sixth. So, like, Beethoven's Sixth is, like, constantly being on cue, almost in a Barry Lyndon way, where there's just, like, a reoccurring classical music leitmotif.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's wild. I don't know if people hear this, they're going to go out and watch Zardoz and then hate me, but it was perfect for a midnight show.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if you've quite convinced me to check it out, just because the Sean Connery barrier is such a huge hurdle for me. I just, like, find him repulsive, and there's so much nakedness.
It's, you, I don't want to say you, I don't want to say you get used to it after a certain point, but it's, like, he doesn't have a super talky role.
Okay.
A lot of it is, like, physicality, because part of the movie thematically is that these Eternals have sort of lost their physicality. And Connery's casting is kind of perfect because he's, like, the, like, representative of, like, primordial manhood in a way. And there's, like, a lot of, like, weird, I guess you might say Freudian or sort of phallic nonsense in the film. But it's, like, it's, I mean, it's funny and it's stupid, but it also makes sense in, like, what they're trying to say, because they have a stagnant society and they need to be, like, rejuvenated, like, through procreation. And it's just wild. It's, like, a totally wild movie. The final, like, there's a final sequence and a final shot, which is unbelievable.
Okay.
It is, like, because you... there's so many cuts in this film where they go from, like, something that is absurd to something that is even more absurd. Yeah. It's just, like, the laughs do not stop.
Okay. I mean...
But in a great way.
Yeah. I mean, it was made by someone who knew what he was doing. It's a singular vision.
It is.
And, worth checking out.
I recommend it.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was just going to be, like, a jokey movie, but it's, like, a real movie.
Yeah. I feel like I did not stump as hard from the movies that I saw that you did for Zardoz.
Well, because this was the biggest surprise for me.
Okay.
Because I thought it was just going to be, like, funny ha-ha and then probably, like, drop off or whatever and I'd go to sleep. But it was good.
All right. Okay. Well, just let me give me 1 second to talk about Last Picture Show.
Do it.
Because it's really good. And while maybe 10 o'clock in the morning at a classic film fest that's supposed to be oriented toward comedy is not necessarily the best time to take it in, mm-hmm. I was still really, really moved. And I think it still resonates even more now than when I originally saw it, just this vision of this town that's been left behind and how happiness is fleeting but it's also, it's like this really, it doesn't traffic in a false kind of nostalgia. Like, you see the teenage life and that looks pretty miserable in its own way. Mm-hmm. And then you see adult life and that's also kind of miserable.
Right.
But they all, they're like just a handful of really great performances that keep it from being just totally just... Just too miserable.
It's harsh.
Yeah, it's, but I have to say, you know, the people who won the Academy Awards are Cloris Leachman and Ben Johnson, right? Mm-hmm.
I think Cloris Leachman, yes.
Cloris Leachman definitely did, and Ben Johnson, I think, maybe was nominated. To me, on this viewing, the hero of the movie was Ella Burstyn.
Yeah.
She's so good.
She's like the hero of everything
movie. Everything she's in.
But, yeah.
Oh.
It's actually crazy to revisit that movie and just to see how stacked that cast is.
Yeah.
Because, like, every role is, like, someone that could be the lead of their own movie.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah, and, again, worth checking out. It seems so obvious. And since you talked about Beethoven for Zardoz.
Yeah.
Bog D's Beethoven equivalent is Hank Williams.
Right.
Also genius composer.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally forgotten that the Joe Stafford song You Belong to Me makes an appearance.
Mm.
But
Joe Stafford, if you want to make a melancholic movie, it's like the law that you have to put a Joe Stafford song in
it. Yes. But it's kind of, so my favorite use of that song is in Carol.
Sure.
And it's that is certainly not the first film to use that song, obviously. But to me, that song has come to just capture the feeling of falling in love. And it's a very, very romantic. But in Last Picture Show, it's the opposite. It's so cynical the way they use it. It's in the background of this, like, of the scene where the Sonny is pawing at JC, is that her name? I think so.
I don't remember.
I just watched it.
You just watched it. But like we said, our brains are not working.
Yeah, exactly. So yet another, like, just way to, it was just sort of kind of dispiriting. The whole thing is both dispiriting and inspiring. It's so good.
Right. Because that's the thing about when, especially in a festival setting like this, which is so joyous just because you're getting to do something that you love. So it's that mixed feeling of when you see a huge bummer movie, but you're also, like, just so grateful that you saw a brilliant work of art, like, with like-minded people in an incredible setting. It's almost like an overwhelming amount of emotions, because it's, like, all emotions at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's great. I mean, it's a different good than, like, the elation you get from, like, seeing a rollicking comedy.
Exactly. Yeah. But I do think, going forward, while we do have Black Narcissus tonight,
right,
I think after that I'm going to want to keep it pretty light.
Keep it light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Last Picture Show really did take a lot out of me.
Mm.
It was... Whew.
Yeah. Well, I saw a nice light picture this morning. It was their yearly Cinerama Dome screening. Actually, this was the second Cinerama Dome screening of the festival, but it was This Is Cinerama. And it was super great because it was the first Cinerama movie from 1952. And it's the one that's basically just like a cinema of attractions. So it's almost like a very early cinema experience because it's non-narrative and it's just about showing an audience images in a new technical form. So, but instead of being 1902, it's 1952. So, Cinerama camera, and they had the camera, one of the cameras that had filmed the movie in the lobby, so you could go and check it out, see how it worked. Going to the Cinerama Dome is always great because they have, like, so much about the history of building the Cinerama Dome and how the projection works and everything. So This Is Cinerama is basically just, like, here's a bunch of images. And actually, it starts with this really adorable prologue, which is the announcer. Lowell Thomas. There you go. Lowell Thomas giving, like, an overview of, like, the motion picture, the development of photography in a weird way. Like, it starts out with cave paintings, and then it goes to, you know, Magic Lantern slides and Edward Moybridge and everything, and then Great Train Robbery. And it's just, like, this little clip show to, like, kind of ease the audience into the fact that what you are about to see is a entry in the history of the pantheon of moving images. Mm-hmm. And it's so charming, like, just to imagine, like, audiences from 60 years ago. And I should say that This Is Cinerama only played in, I think, 14 theaters nationwide. It was the highest grossing film of 1952.
That's amazing.
So, literally, those theaters were doing the most gangbusters business that anyone has ever done. Because that's insane.
That is nuts.
And it's, you know, like, the cinema... The movie business was on decline in 1952 because television was taking over. So, you can imagine that people were hungry for something more cinematic than, you know, than Marty or something like that, because they wanted to see a spectacle. And people really paid, like, a theater price. And there's intro music and outro music and curtains, and there's an intermission and surround sound, and it was like a night at the movies.
Yeah.
But the first opening image, which is pretty famous, is it's just a camera on a roller coaster, like at Coney Island or some East Coast amusement park, and it just goes up and down the roller coaster, and you have, that's the middle panel, and then you have the right and the left panel, and you're seeing, you know, the, you're seeing everything that you would see if you were on the roller coaster.
Yeah.
And all the segments are like that. Like, there's one that's a staging of Aida. There's one that's a church choir singing Hallelujah Chorus. There's one that's, you know, and then this, the last half of it is basically scenic photography from helicopters over, like, great places in America. So, you know, like, the Grand Canyon, wheat fields,
yeah.
Pittsburgh for some reason.
Scenic Pittsburgh.
No offense to Pittsburgh. But yeah, so it's great. And it's funny too, because a lot of the cinematic techniques have been co-opted into narrative cinema now, and everybody has a GoPro and they can just kind of do that kind of photography now. But it was so great just to see, like, this is Cinerama in its original setting, you know,
yeah,
in the roadshow production, and have Leonard Maltin come out and introduce it and give, like, a really great background. And
yeah,
it was great. Like, I always love going to the Cinerama screenings at TCM Fest, just because it's an experience. Maybe not once in a lifetime, but pretty rare. Mm-hmm. You know,
like, how many towns have a Cinerama dome?
Well, I don't know, actually. Yeah. I think
how many of them are left?
Not that many, yeah. But I mean, it's, they released the original Cinerama movies on Blu-ray, and they did this technological innovation called Smilebox, which basically is a kind of just a fisheye lens letterbox, so it replicates sort of the perception of Cinerama pretty well. I mean, it's effective, but there's really nothing like looking at Cinerama.
Right, you gotta be in the dome.
In the Cinerama dome. With the three screens and the three projectors, and to really get that. So I think they're fun. I mean, the movies are, like, it's pure spectacle.
Yeah.
But I had a great time.
I just found out that the first Nepalese film was a Cinerama film.
So, really?
Funded, yeah. And they don't have a dome there, so no one there got
no
to
one,
see
no
it.
No one in Nepal has ever seen the movie.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Fascinating, but you know, if you're gonna spend the money to produce a film, you want the best.
Right.
But then there's no way to screen it in Nepal back in the 50s or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. Little tidbit. There you go. And it's funny. Which would you recommend? Would you recommend seeing This Is Cinerama first or Last Picture Show first? I feel like you go see Last Picture Show, and then you go see This Is Cinerama, because, you know, you don't want to watch the movie. First, you watch the movie about the death of cinema, and then you go to This Is Cinerama to feel rejuvenated, right?
Yeah. If I was making my own festival schedule, that would probably be better.
Okay.
Or I'd see them on separate days.
Yeah. Good call. All right. Should we do just a quick sneak peek of what's ahead? We have one more
little
podcast coming up. Planned. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Just to wrap this up. As I said, we have Black Narcissus coming up, and Theodore Goes Wild today. And then tomorrow, our schedules are still a little bit up in the air. They announced the TBAs.
Mm-hmm.
And
to be announced.
Yeah. Blah. And we'll let you know what we see, obviously. So you'll just have to stay tuned.
Yeah, but that's the fun thing about Sunday, is you got to keep your schedule open, because you never know what's going to get reprogrammed.
Exactly. And honestly, I'm up for whatever at this point. I'm just tired.
I'm tired, but I'm having a good time. I've achieved that sort of, like, mid-festival zen, where you just come to the realization that kind of whatever you go to is going to be good.
Yeah.
So you just, like, let it come, baby.
Yeah.
And if you have to take a nap in the middle of the day,
yeah,
I highly recommend you take a nap in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Take it easy.
I watched a movie this morning about American POWs stuck in a German
So your life is pretty good compared to that.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. This is, like, I'm talking like this is a real hardship.
Yeah, like, what a chore.
This is not at all. This is so much fun.
No, it's super
fun. This has been a blast.
It's super fun.
Yeah.
And we're going to have more fun tonight and tomorrow.
Exactly. You should all feel very jealous.
No. I'm maybe a little jealous.
Maybe a little, though.